This paper discusses estimating demand shocks.
Yes, specifically in customer-facing businesses.
Like retail, service, and health sectors.
They say it's hard to measure demand shocks there.
Why is that?
Because output only occurs when a customer actually arrives at the establishment.
I see. Unlike manufacturing, where output can be tracked more directly.
Precisely. So they introduce a new way.
Using high-frequency foot traffic data from Safegraph?
That's right. For New York City.
But foot traffic isn't the same as demand, is it? It could be influenced by a store's own strategies.
That's a good point. They recognize that.
So how do they account for it?
They present a theoretical framework. It isolates establishment-level demand fluctuations.
And separates those from firm-level strategic choices?
Exactly. That's a core part of their approach.
What did they find after doing all this?
Significant heterogeneity in the persistence of these demand shocks.
And in their trends?
Yes. They also found that simply pooling all establishments together understates the variance experienced by some.
So treating all businesses the same would be misleading?
That's the core message here.
Let's talk about the data itself, Safegraph.
It uses mobile location data, tracks movements.
So cell phone pings? Millions of smartphones?
That's the source. It provides detailed info on visits and unique visitors.
Is that data perfectly clean from the start?
No, they identify sampling biases.
Wait, sampling biases across locations and time? What kind of biases?
Safegraph expanded its coverage over time. That expansion wasn't representative.
So it introduced artificial trends? Upward trends unrelated to actual economic activity?
That's what they claim, and these patterns varied by borough.
I'm not convinced those biases are easy to correct. How did they do it?
They linked the data to the American Community Survey.
Why the ACS?
As a benchmark for representativeness. They reweighted census block group level counts.
And for the time trends?
They normalized monthly visitor counts relative to a long-run average. That removed the artificial upward trends.
They focus on branded establishments. Why is that important?
It allows them to separate random variation in demand from marketing or product decisions.
Because branded firms typically have centralized strategies?
Exactly. Standardized pricing, marketing, product offerings.
They analyze year-over-year foot traffic growth and monthly volatility.
They found a lot of dispersion.
Monthly volatility exceeds 30% even for establishments with stable annual growth? That seems unusually high.
That's what their data shows. Even for businesses whose annual foot traffic nearly doubles, the monthly changes are highly uneven.
Did they see differences in this growth and volatility across boroughs or sectors initially?
Yes, Manhattan showed greater volatility, and the health sector had higher growth rates.
But earlier you said the heterogeneity wasn't explained by sector or geography. That doesn't seem right.
That's a crucial distinction. Those were initial observations. The deeper analysis after their model tells a different story.
So, let's get into that model. How does it separate exogenous demand shocks from firm strategies?
They model foot traffic as a multiplicative function.
A function of what?
Of the firm's marketing effort, S, and a random shock, Z.
And Z is the actual establishment-level demand shock?
Yes, it has persistence and an establishment-specific innovation.
So the firm chooses marketing so to maximize profit.
Right, and depends on the firm's expectation of the average establishment shock.
They take logs and difference over a 12-month horizon. Why?
To remove periodicity and fix market effects.
And then they estimate a regression with fixed effects?
Yes, they remove market time fixed effects and brand-specific time effects.
Wait, why remove brand-specific time effects?
Because those effects capture the brand's collective advertising decisions. They want to isolate the purely exogenous establishment-level shock.
Okay, so the final estimated equation, delta tilde your RHO, delta tilde lag plus epsilon, comes from the residual foot traffic?
That's the approach. RHO is the persistence of the underlying demand shock. Epsilon is the innovation.
Then they used K-means clustering. Why an unsupervised machine learning approach?
They argue it's because the data is novel. An agnostic approach helps avoid biased modeling choices.
So they didn't just predefine categories like large or small firms?
Exactly. It allowed the data to reveal its own structure.
How many clusters did they find?
Three distinct categories.
And what were they called?
Fast-growing, low-traffic, and high-traffic.
And these clusters explain the demand dynamics better than sector or geography?
That's their strong claim. Each cluster appears across boroughs and sectors in similar proportions.
I'm not convinced. Are you saying location and industry don't matter much for demand shocks?
The paper concludes the heterogeneity reflects establishment-level differences, not structural differences across industries or locations.
What kind of differences?
Things like managerial quality, local competition, or other unobserved attributes specific to that location.
And what did these clusters reveal about the demand shocks?
Low-traffic establishments had significantly lower persistence and the highest standard deviation of shocks.
While high-traffic establishments showed high persistence and the lowest variance?
Correct. Fast-growing was in between.
So a pooled regression without these clusters would give a very inaccurate picture.
Massively. It would overstate persistence for some and understate variance for others.
Why does this all matter for broader economic models?
Most economic models of firm behavior assume all firms draw shocks from a single stochastic process.
So they all face the same type of random shock?
Yes, and use a single cutoff for decisions like investment or entry.
But this paper shows that assumption is flawed.
Exactly. It shows multiple, systematically different demand processes.
And what are the consequences of ignoring this heterogeneity?
Two main failures.
What's the first?
Misidentification of marginal establishments.
Wait, why would marginal firms be misidentified?
Because the value of an upgrade or an investment depends on the persistence of the demand shock.
So a firm facing highly persistent shocks needs less current demand growth to justify an investment?
Precisely. High traffic firms with high persistence will upgrade at a lower current demand state than low traffic firms.
And the second failure?
Incorrect comparative statics.
What does that mean for policy analysis?
If a policy changes, say, the cost of opening a new establishment, the response varies across these firm groups.
Because the upgrade threshold depends on the persistence of their specific shock?
That's it. Firms with less persistent shocks would have larger changes in their upgrade cutoffs.
So imposing a common shock process would force all firms to respond as if they shared the same persistence?
Leading to biased predictions for aggregate outcomes like investment or job creation.
So the single process benchmark would predict more investment than actually occurs if we accounted for the heterogeneity?
That's exactly what their numerical example shows.
So, to summarize, demand dynamics in customer-facing industries are fundamentally heterogeneous.
Yes, and this isn't primarily explained by sector or geography.
But by establishment-specific factors?
Things like managerial practices, local competition, or other unobserved attributes.
And ignoring these distinct demand processes leads to models that misrepresent the persistence and volatility of shocks.
That's the key takeaway for economists. It calls for better calibration of models.